Coming up on Tech News Today, Facebook shuts out the competition, Lenovo wants RIM, and why the internet is essential. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, January 25th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to Squarespace.com and use offer code TNT1. And they recently launched a developer platform for complete code control. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zaktar.
I'm Darren Kitchen.
And I'm OMG Chad.
Yeah, Jason Howell's got the day off. It's good to have you back, Sarah Lane. Hope
Thank
you're feeling
you.
Better.
I hope I do okay.
You're good.
I feel a little foggy, but it's good to be back.
Let's start with the top 10 stories of the day in the news views. Paris judge Anne-Marie Sautereau ruled Thursday in favor of an Association of Jewish Students in France, or UEJF as you may see it, request for account details of Twitter users that used an anti-Semitic hashtag. Twitter has been given 2 weeks to comply with that ruling. Should it fail to do so, it would be fined 1,000 euros per day.
IDC has released its latest numbers on the quarter and estimates that Samsung shipped a record 63.7 million smartphones during the period, which is a 29% share of the industry-wide 219.4 million units shipped in the quarter. But there's more. Samsung's total for 2012 hit 215.8 million units, up 129% on its 2011 figure.
Microsoft reported its fiscal Q2 2013 results. Revenue was $21.5 billion, which is up 2.7% compared to last year at the same time. The Windows division, which includes the Surface, increased its revenue by 24%, although specifics about Surface sales were not broken out. It wasn't all sunshine and rainbows for Microsoft, as its net income was down 3.7% compared to last year.
Verizon hasn't been making much good use of the 700 megahertz spectrum that it acquired in 2008. The spectrum comes with some open access provisions that doesn't really work well with Verizon's existing network. Well, that could now become AT&T's problem. AT&T announced that it intends to buy the licenses for the spectrum from Verizon as a part of a $1.9 billion spectrum swap deal. AT&T will transfer some of its advanced wireless spectrum in the western states, and this whole thing is subject to regulatory approval later this year.
The fight for finding friends rages on. Within hours of the launch of Vine, the new 6-second video app for Twitter, Facebook blocked the ability for Vine users to find their Facebook friends on Vine. Previously, Twitter cut off access to Instagram's ability to find Twitter friends. And of course, Facebook owns Instagram, so that's this whole back and forth thing.
Lenovo, the second largest PC producer, is assessing potential acquisition targets and alliances, including a deal with RIM. We are looking at all opportunities, RIM and many others, says Chief Financial Officer Wang Wai-Ming yesterday in an interview at the World Economic Forum happening in Switzerland. Also says, we have no hesitation if the right opportunity comes along that could benefit us and shareholders.
A German court ruled that internet is an essential part of life, and if internet access is disrupted, people can claim compensation from the ISP. The case revolved around a man who could not use his DSL connection. German law allows for compensation when there is a loss of essential material items. Now the internet is on that list of essentials.
Apple issued its supplier responsibility report, and it says that it is severing relationships with Guangdong Real Faith Pingzhu Electronics after finding 74 underage labor violations. Now, this is the latest report Apple concluded with 339 audits of its supply chain, and that's up 72% more audits compared to its 2011 report.
Belkin announced Thursday it plans to acquire Cisco's home networking unit, which includes the Linksys brand. Belkin intends to keep the Linksys brand and guaranteed it would honor all warranties. The move marks Cisco's definitive turn away from the consumer market. Financial terms of the deal have not yet been disclosed.
The Caribbean island of Antigua is due to appear before the World Trade Organization on January 28th, seeking permission to run a site that sells music, movies, and software, but goes around copyright law. Antigua went to the WTO after the U.S. moved to stop American citizens from using gambling services, including betting shops and casinos run from the Caribbean country. Antigua claims the action deprived it of billions of dollars in revenue. The U.S. has objected to Antigua's plan, saying it amounted to official piracy of intellectual property.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace. If you need a way to make an online blog, a portfolio, a gallery, just need a website that looks great. You may be tearing your hair out. I know I was when I was first putting websites together. I'm like, I'm horrible at the design thing. I can make the code happen. I can make the content happen. But making it look good, that's what Squarespace is about. So that and reliability and tools to make it easy. So you focus on your message. You focus on your content. You put that up on Squarespace. They make sure that your website looks right on mobile devices so that you have a great looking website on a desktop and a laptop, but also a great looking website on a phone, on a tablet. And it's fast and easy to use. Beautiful templates, 100% drag and drop functionality make it easier than anyone to build a website. Better social media integration, exceptionally well designed, and integrates all your website needs. You want a domain name? You can get one with Squarespace. Points right to your blog. You own the domain name. No, not Squarespace. They have this great design we've been talking about, development, hosting, reliable hosting of your website, and customer support. It's a unified service making it faster and easier than ever to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. For a free trial, do this. Go to squarespace.com, sign up for a free account. You don't need to give them anything, no credit card, nothing. Just try it out. Start building your website. Then if you decide to purchase the service, use this offer code. Remember this, TNT1, and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. Whether it's monthly or annual plans, you're going to save more. You get that annual plan, 10% off the whole year. That's squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT1, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Everything you need to create an exceptional website, squarespace.com. Sarah Lane, welcome back to the show. You did your news fuse check. You passed the news fuse test.
That's good to hear.
Darren Kitchen, of course, joining us today from Hack 5. And you're in Brian Brushwood's studio in Austin?
Yeah, I just kind of took over the place. And it's, it's good times here in Austin.
Yeah. So you're doing pen testing of Brian's house?
Well, I use some bump keys to penetrate, test my way into the complex, and I have everybody tied up downstairs. So far, so good. I'll keep you posted on the matter.
One way I know that Sarah is on the fast road to recovery is that she chose a Facebook story to discuss starting today.
Yeah, why not? Huh? It's Friday. The big story is Facebook cutting off API access to a variety of services. Twitter's new photo app Vine, which was released yesterday, messaging app Voxer, which this happened last week. Basically, this is Facebook's, if you sign up for Vine, you've got a nice little big button that says, would you like to see who of your Facebook friends are on Vine so that you could populate your feed really quickly, that sort of thing. Well, Facebook is cutting that off, and a lot of people say, well, you know, this is just dirty, and because Twitter owns Vine, that's what's going on. But this isn't new. Facebook blocked Twitter from using its Find Friend feature back in 2010. Google and Facebook have gone at it as a result of Facebook allowing people to import Gmail contacts, but then not allowing them to export friend lists, which you can now do, but it's plain text and not really very helpful. Twitter cut off Instagram's access, as we mentioned in the news fuse, to Twitter's own, basically the same version of Find Friends. That was last summer. So to me, it's sort of like, well, this is what big companies do, right? Because they want to make it hard for you to have a really easy way to populate a feed somewhere else in a place that you might like better than, let's say, Facebook or Twitter. Josh Constein at TechCrunch, who is also very interested in Facebook, that's all he writes about. He has pretty good points. He says, you know, Facebook's not an open platform. And if companies are worried that Find Friends or other Facebook data access can just get ripped away. Facebook decides to turn off the API hose, and all of a sudden, a service like Voxer, you have no access to Facebook anymore. Are developers going to think that that's okay? Or are they just going to say, well, you know, if we have limited maybe time, money, and resources, we won't add that Facebook button? Because what's the point? As we've seen with the Russian search engine Yandex, they've got a new search mobile app. It's called Wonder. Got all of its API calls blocked for Facebook 3 hours after it launched. So you have to assume they put a lot of effort into that. Ayaz, what do you think? Is this just sort of par for the course?
Well, I think par for the course is a good way to describe it. But I'm wondering if Facebook's just trying to get people to develop for Facebook in general. So instead of having Vine for iOS, maybe Vine should come out with a Facebook app that you would upload things directly to that. This does smack of just anger between Twitter and Facebook. Flat out, these two companies are not getting along when it comes to sharing data very much. I mean, they're both closed off. That's what they've been doing over the years. They've been saying, look, this is our data. You want to access it, you pay us. And Facebook, they're just getting more and more closed. So it'd be helpful to companies like, well, not Vine because it's a subsidiary, but if they could get a user base because you can find your Facebook friends, but then again, you can always access your address book or, well, your Twitter friends as well.
I think that what's interesting to me is that this used to be the opposite issue, right? It used to be like, how come all of these services online are sharing with each other and allowing each other to find friends? Isn't that a bad idea? And the argument then was, no, it's being open is good and it helps us and the rising tide floats all boats and co-opetition. And the pendulum is swinging back the other way now. As the companies get more valuable, they get more protective. They're now, in Facebook's case, publicly traded. They are starting to focus more on the bottom line and getting a little skittish about allowing other people access to their data. So I feel like we're going to go through this period for a while where it's going to be these fights and these lockdowns. And, well, you can't have my friends access to my data if you don't give me access to your data. And we'll swing through it, I think, into a more we'll start to lose the benefits of openness and swing back through it eventually.
I think a lot of these services, too, it is really easy. There's a new social network, whether it's mobile or whatever. You know, all the usual suspects are using it. If you have the same kind of friends that also like the same social networks you do, and you import all your Twitter friends and your Facebook friends, and it's kind of this replicated experience over and over. And I'm not saying it's good that API access is being cut off at all, but it does sort of force at least someone like me a more organic, who do I really want to add on here? Who am I going to search for? What's my friend user base going to be? Because as we all know, sometimes the people that you're following or friending on Twitter and Facebook are not necessarily that organic group of actual friends that are the most interesting. There are all sorts of reasons why people, add each other and met at a party or whatever. So yeah, it's maybe it'll keep certain social networks from being more popular than they actually are, seeming more popular.
Each social network have like unique content to it. And so instead of just pushing everything to everywhere, it's just like, oh, on Facebook, you wrote something different than you did on Twitter.
It's like you have to try so hard to find friends that maybe you'd be like, Vine is kind of dumb. I don't want to use it, instead of just populating so easily.
I mean, Facebook
make us work for it.
Facebook's most valuable asset really just is their subscribers. They've built that up, and I can understand how they could feel threatened by this kind of openness and even do a 180 here on this, like Tom had said. The Yandex example there is a great example of like beggar thy neighbor, where it's like turning off the lights after the fact. It's not I don't think it's good for anybody in that situation, but I think ultimately this really provides an opportunity, because if all of these networks have no problem importing other users but don't want users coming out of their system, then that just says that there's a need for some sort of open standard for cataloging all of your friends. Just kind of like you have like an OPML of your RSS feeds, you need something like that where like these are my friends and I want to take them to my different networks. I don't want to have to type in their email address every single time I join a new network. That's the way
all
I
right,
see this.
It's earnings week right now, and of course, Microsoft was eagerly awaited. What did we find out when Microsoft allowed their earnings? Did Windows win?
It depends on how you read it, I guess. Or if you're looking at hard numbers, which Microsoft didn't really give, or if you're looking at their PR statement. So Microsoft released its fiscal numbers. It says revenue rose 2.7%. Apparently, this was a record of the amount of revenue they've made, but net income was down. And obviously, a lot of the focus is going to be on the Windows division, which, like I said before, includes the Surface hardware division. It experienced a 24% revenue increase. They made $5.88 billion. Microsoft said that 60 million Windows 8 licenses were sold, but they've also said that before. So this isn't the first time they've mentioned that this month. Peter Klein, the CFO, says the increase in revenues were due to retail upgrades, Surface sales, and multi-year license agreements with enterprises, which were up double digits. Now, that could mean either Windows 8 or Windows 7. So it's not really known what exactly is being sold there. The Surface numbers weren't broken out, but Klein says Microsoft will expand the product lineup and is working with the OEMs to deliver touch devices at the right price point. So read that to mean cheaper tablets. Of course, all these results mean that Microsoft shares went down 2.2% in after-hours trading. And the Xbox division down 11%. So probably just waiting around for a refresh. Darren, do you think this modest improvement in revenue but a lower profit, is it too early to say that Windows 8 isn't a hit?
Well, I'm really the wrong person to ask just because it's hard for me to get excited about Windows 8 since switching to Linux as my primary OS. But that said, I will say that, you know, Windows 8 is really good for enterprise adoption of Windows 7. And so Microsoft's going to make money no matter what.
Tom, do you think that if Microsoft can get the price of Windows 8 devices lower, you think that's going to drive adoption over time?
I possibly, yeah. I think if Microsoft can bring the prices down, they'll sell more. And people are familiar with Windows devices. I think that's fair. However, I think what these numbers seem to indicate when you really start to dig into them is Microsoft is successful at being an enterprise company. The reason that the Windows division is leading the way this time is partly because of deferred purchases, all of the Windows 8 pre-sales, partly because they sold a ton of Windows licenses to OEMs. Now, those OEMs may not have sold the actual PCs yet, but Windows rakes that in, and they're negotiating these big deals with enterprise to continue to support, to upgrade. And what was the last quarter leading the way was Microsoft Office, and Microsoft Office makes most of its money in the enterprise. So I feel like Microsoft is sort of dragging its heels, kicking and screaming into becoming the next IBM, and they would be smarter to embrace it, to look at the advantages they have in that space and go for it and start to take on companies like IBM and make sure that they get in there before HP starts to move its huge aircraft carrier around into that space. I know that Steve Ballmer doesn't want that. He wants to continue to be a consumer company, and they have some great consumer products with things like the Xbox, and I'm not saying they should abandon those, but the tail is in the numbers here. Microsoft is good and successful at supporting big companies.
It seems like the different divisions are rotating which one is the lead. It was like, here's Windows and here's Office, and then when Xbox gets upgraded next year, likely that's going to be the division that starts leading the entertainment and devices division. I mean, does that show like a lack of focus, or is that actually a good thing that they have so many various leaders in different quarters?
I think it's a good thing. Diversity is always a good thing, but it also implies a little bit of a lack of focus. Obviously, they're not doing badly. They got record revenue. It's all about the future. Are they pointed in the right direction? And right now, I'm not sure even Microsoft knows exactly what direction it's pointed in.
It's like
maybe 5 years ago when Microsoft was, you know, Office and Windows, that then I'd be concerned if they hadn't done anything. But I'd say in the last 5 years, they really have done a great job at diversifying. It's just one of those things. You just got to keep throwing things at the wall and see what sticks.
Now, a good example of what we're talking about here is that IBM got rid of Lenovo and said, we're not going to be in the consumer space anymore. You know, we're not even going to sell hardware in that way anymore. And Lenovo has turned it into a very successful business. Ayaz, what's the next step for Lenovo? This is intriguing.
Yeah, this is crazy. So this is no rumor. As Sarah mentioned in the news fuse, Lenovo might be doing a deal with RIM in the future. No, this is, again, not a rumor. This is from the CFO of Lenovo, Wang Wei Ming. He says that Lenovo is looking at all opportunities, RIM and many others. But specifically, Wang said that Lenovo has spoken to RIM and its bankers about various combinations or strategic ventures. Now, RIM hasn't commented about this publicly. If Lenovo was to purchase RIM, it would be subject to an automatic review by the Canadian government, by the way, to see if the transaction is of a net benefit to the country. Sarah, do you think a licensing agreement or acquisition would best suit Lenovo, or neither?
It seems like a little bit of a weird matchup to me. When I read this article, I was like, really? Lenovo and RIM? I've been waiting for somebody to outright buy RIM for some time now. So I'm not sure that a licensing arrangement is in RIM's best interest. However, it would certainly give the company more options to see if licensing agreements would work across the board. If they have something that is a net benefit in Canada's eyes, but also both of the company's eyes, then, you know, that's something that that executives at RIM have already said they're potentially interested in as well. So I'm not really sure what would be better, but I think that RIM is, it's probably good that a company is actively interested and being public about it.
Tom, do you think this is in the best interest of Lenovo to pick up another company that has good keyboards?
Yes, I think this is a smart move for Lenovo. Of course, it depends on how much they have to pay out and all of that. But getting the RIM Enterprise service, getting the RIM hardware and the keyboards, Lenovo has made baby steps into the mobile market, but nothing has really caught fire. No one's really been blown away. If BlackBerry OS 10 proves to be successful when it comes out next week, this could be a great thing for Lenovo. I'm not sure it's a great thing for RIM. Except in the case where they decide that they just can't make it on their own anymore. I don't know that RIM going into Lenovo doesn't just get taken apart and used for parts in a Lenovo plan. And maybe that's all they need. If it's like, well, you know what, we need to make some money out of this company, that's how we're going to do it. I think RIM is really wanting to stay RIM and license its operating system, license its enterprise technology. That seems to be where Thorsten Heinz is pointed towards.
Yeah, I'd say that it doesn't strike me as weird at all. I mean, Lenovo has a great image as like a business PC. RIM has a great image as a business phone. So it makes sense. That said, you know, I've been saying for a while that RIM should, you know, again, like license their software, like Tom is saying. You know, it does a great job with this enterprise stuff. They should embrace iOS and Android. I would rather see them do that themselves and kind of split up like Palm did with, you know, Palm and Palm One doing the hardware and the software and stuff. This doesn't give me the kind of warm fuzzies that I got, like, you know, with like Palm and Handspring, where it made sense like that. I think ultimately this comes down to Canada, though, because, you know, they've got a lot at stake here with that company.
Yeah, well, yeah. When Lenovo bought IBM's PC business, they were pretty respectful and kept that ThinkPad line pretty steady for the next couple of years and slowly introduced the IdeaPad line. They didn't mess with what worked. So if they took over RIM, they would likely, or if they licensed it or had a similar design, they would likely be very respectful and try to just grow over time to be accepted. Because I remember when people were saying, what's Lenovo? Lenovo, I mean, they bought IBM. That's crazy. But it worked out really well.
Now, one thing that Feld pointed out in the chat room is that if Lenovo buys RIM, maybe you could call it Pacific RIM. Okay, never mind. Sorry, Feld. I tried. AT&T earnings report yesterday and went shopping for a little spectrum this morning, didn't they, Sarah?
Yeah, from Verizon, no less. AT&T has acquired 700 megahertz B-band spectrum, quite a bit of it, from Verizon. They paid $1.9 billion in cash. The licenses are going to cover more than 42 million people across 18 U.S. states. So this is it's big. They also get advanced wireless services spectrum licenses in five of those markets, subject to regulatory approval, but if all goes well, the deal would be done in the second half of this year. So you might wonder, well, why would Verizon give AT&T all of the spectrum? I mean, they're the two biggest carriers and the biggest rivals. Verizon had said for a long time that if it was able to buy some of its rivals' spectrum, it would be happy to get rid of the extra 700 megahertz licenses that it purchased back in 2008 during auctions, because the spectrum doesn't really work that well for Verizon's existing infrastructure. So it's great. I mean, they basically bought a bunch of spectrum that they didn't want so that AT&T would have to pay almost $2 billion a couple of years later just to get it so they could roll out their own network. It's kind of brilliant on Verizon's part, but it's good for AT&T as well. They obviously have the cash to spend. They're being aggressive about rolling out LTE and blanketing more of the U.S. We talked about another acquisition of spectrum earlier this week. And AT&T also provided their earnings report as well. And there's some impressive numbers. Q4 of 2012, overall quarterly revenues of $32.6 billion. Not a huge increase over 2011, but a small one. An increase nonetheless. Earnings per share of 44 cents, but also record smartphone sales. The carrier sold 10.2 million smartphone devices, activated 8.6 million iPhones alone. So you can see where the majority of those phone sales from AT&T are going. And I don't know, it seems like AT&T is like having a really aggressive Q1 of 2013. They're rolling out spectrum. They're buying stuff that seems smart. They are aggressively rolling out their LTE network. They've even said that it's going quicker than planned, the rollout. I don't know. Tom, does this seem like AT&T is going to catch up to Verizon sooner than later?
Well, AT&T's LTE rollout has been impressive. They've rolled it out a lot faster than they expected. And everybody always expects that these companies are kind of saying that they're going to roll it faster out than they do. So I'll give them that. This spectrum reallocation is interesting for a couple of reasons. One, it's rearranging the pieces on the table. Verizon gets a little, AT&T gets a little, Verizon gets the money out of it. That's why they bid on this 700 megahertz spectrum back in 2008, is they knew it would be valuable even if they weren't able to use it, and they're not. It just doesn't fit in with their network plans. But the other thing is that 700 megahertz spectrum comes with open access provisions. Google got into the bidding on that B-band spectrum and forced the bidder to accept open access if they were to use it. And that's another reason Verizon didn't want this spectrum. Now AT&T has to deal with that. If they use the spectrum, they have to allow other carriers to use it as well for a fee. They can charge for it, but they can't prevent people from using that spectrum. So it said, I'm curious what AT&T is going to end up doing with this. 700 megahertz is valuable, though, in and of itself, because it does penetrate walls better. It's just a better piece of spectrum to have generally than the AWS. And you know, AWS in the Western states, not a bad thing for Verizon to have access to as well. But getting right to the earnings, yeah, AT&T not slowing down. For all the complaining we do up in the Bay Area anyway and other places, AT&T seems to be doing fine.
I wonder if that that open spectrum is going to mean that AT&T is going to allow other devices in, or are they going to have a sub-brand? I mean, Sprint has a whole bunch of subsidiaries and other brands that they use. Maybe if they wanted to, they could have a separate brand to go, okay, look, you know, you can bring your device here. That's fine with us. But if you want to be an AT&T, you have to pay for that separately. I like what they're doing. They are being aggressive. It's not that they wanted to get T-Mobile to become huge, but they couldn't do that. And now buying spectrum from Verizon, which just kind of cracks me up, that Verizon got to flip spectrum. It's like, okay, we bought it. We cleaned it up a little and you can have it later. Actually, they didn't do anything to it. It's like, we just bought it. We kept it. So this is this could be an interesting business for Verizon. Whoever has a lot of money can just keep flipping spectrum all day.
Put in some new countertops.
Oh, where's the countertops with you?
Spruce it up, you know, paint. Go to paint on that spectrum. All right, let's talk about a couple of other stories here. The internet is an essential part of life, says a German court. The Federal Court of Justice in Karlsruhe ruled that a consumer's right to monetary compensation extends to the internet. Now, a little background here. In Germany, if you lose essential material items, you can require to be compensated. So what happened was a guy lost his DSL for 2 months. He was compensated for the loss of his landline and fax services, but he was not compensated for the loss of his internet service. So he went to court, and the court said, yeah, internet, you should be compensated for. But in the decision, the judge ruled the internet plays a very important role today and affects the private life of an individual in very decisive ways. Therefore, loss of use of the internet is comparable to the loss of use of a car. Now, I did it. I started a Google Plus thread on this, and I said, let's avoid the idea of like, well, you can survive without electricity. All you need is food, water, and shelter. That's absolutely true. That's not what's at debate here. Is the internet, where does the internet fit in our modern conveniences? Is it as fundamental as electricity and running water, which we all agree is needs to be accessible to everyone? Is it like a car? I mean, what do you think, Darren? Where does the internet fit now in our hierarchy of needs?
Well, in 2011, the United Nations had a special report that considers cutting off somebody's internet access, whether that be, you know, on grounds of violating intellectual property laws or whatever, to be a violation of their international covenants on civil and political rights. That said, Germany, it sounds like they're joining the ranks of, you know, Costa Rica, Estonia, Finland, France, Greece, and Spain, who have all had precedents like this in law making internet access a right. I feel that, you know, more countries should follow suit. And that, yeah, it absolutely is. It's a utility. It's like basically, you know, you can't get banned from a library, so you shouldn't be banned from the internet.
Well, you can't get banned from the library, but you have to do something pretty...
Okay, but you'd have to fling poo yeah. or something, and that's stupid.
Right.
Don't do that.
On this Google Plus thread, a lot of folks were saying it's essential for business. It's essential for being able to get ahead, to get an advantage. It gives you having it may not be essential to living, but it's essential to improving your life. And a lot of people said, you know, I think having internet is above phone at this point. It's more important than having a telephone line. Sarah, what do you think?
I agree. In fact, you know, when you mentioned, is it sort of like a car? I know, you know, it's sort of a joke. Internet's a series of tubes and all that, but it sort of is. It sort of is like a car. I mean, I'm at point A. How do I get to point B? And point B is somewhere on Amazon. You know, it's like the internet can take me there. And someone in chat was mentioning, listen, you know, you run a business from home. I mean, there's all sorts of things. If, you know, physically, there might be some impediment or some other reason that you have to use the internet for your livelihood. It's there and it's extremely important. And yeah, I certainly put it above a phone. I mean, in basically all instances, I can use my internet as a phone. I have like a million choices. So yeah, I absolutely believe. I mean, if we're talking about being able to complete tasks that I think we would all agree is necessary for, you know, health and shelter and, you know, just kind of getting by in life, the internet is absolutely essential. And I know that people survive without it, but I sure wouldn't want to.
Given that we're at some point into the internet becoming a utility like the electricity, even you can debate whether we're actually there quite yet or not, but it looks like it's definitely on its way there. What rights do we have to it?
I mean, I think you could probably link it to communication. I mean, we have the right to like assemble, and effectively the internet assembles you, right? You have a bunch of people all over the world, and they're connected by these series of tubes, whatever you want to make the joke, but it's all Ethernet, whatever you want.
Superhighway.
Sure, whatever the connection is. But they're all connected, and that's, I think it's just, if you can't stop somebody from speaking, you shouldn't be able to stop them from getting internet access. I mean, internet access is just, like Sarah was saying, like it can replace like your phone. If you have like a right to television or radio, like, well, it can replace that too. So it gives you so much more than any other thing ever did. Well, you need electricity for it. But I mean, it's really, it just seems like it just goes with communication so tightly that it's kind of hard to start divorcing that concept as this, oh, it's just this little niche thing that nerds use. It's like, no, we all use this. It gets us data all the time, and we can't remove that.
I'm very passionate about this because I actually feel that I have grown up on the internet, and I've made all of these friends through IRC and forums and different places that transcend any sort of borders. So I almost feel like a nationality towards the internet, and I kind of feel like the internet in itself kind of needs to be considered. Cyberspace needs to be considered a place with its own sovereignty. But that's just me because I'm out there.
No, yeah, I mean, that's what the whole Declaration of Internet Independence was about, internet freedom. That's what the Electronic Frontier Foundation is fighting to protect all the time. You're certainly not alone. You're probably even part of a mainstream on the internet. A lot of people feel loyalty, if not to the internet as a country, like you're saying, but at least to the community that they belong to on the internet over other communities that might have been more traditional. So I think this is an important thing. And I think a lot of people want to dismiss it out of hand as like, oh, it's a luxury. Sure, we love it, but we can get along without it. And there was one post on this Google Plus thread from Suzanne Lewis I thought was very poignant. She said, I think it's difficult for some to separate the usefulness and growing necessity of internet access with the part that entertains you. So just because there are funny cat videos on the internet does not mean that that is all the internet is for. Though it's very important.
It's very important, Tom.
I knew you would agree with me.
I don't think it's funny at all.
I don't think
the internet is made of cats. Cats, really cats.
No, I mean, like, people have, like, companion dogs that are almost, like, prescribed to them that they can take anywhere because, you know, they need that happy companion. And I think that some could argue that the cat videos on the internet, you know, have that same kind of purpose for some people.
Sure. No, but even if you didn't, that's a fair point. I'm not disputing that. But you don't even have to make that point, I think is what Suzanne Lewis was saying, is that we shouldn't, whether it's cat videos or anything else, we shouldn't let the fact that, oh, you can use it for entertainment be the be-all, end-all of the usefulness of the internet. Entertainment's important, too. I mean, that's a fair point. Let's finish up with something called Common Crawl. It's a nonprofit web database founded by Factual CEO Gilad Elbaz, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing your name. Also has Google's director of research Peter Norvig on board and MIT Media Lab director Joy Ito on its board. So some heavyweight hitters behind this thing. They are trying to create a database of the web that is openly accessible to anyone to index and use. They've got 5 billion pages, adding up to 81 terabytes of data. It's available on Amazon Cloud Computing. So if you're a programmer, you want to take advantage of this, you pay $25. That's a little bit of money, but it's not much. And then you can start your business. And they, in this article on the technologyreview.com website, they talk about a lot of the companies taking advantage of this. TinEye is a reverse search engine that finds images similar to the one you provide. So you say, I'm looking for other images like this. It's able to find those images, and it used Common Crawl's database to get itself up and running. Another programmer used it to determine Facebook connections to web pages and got funding for his company, Lucky Oyster, which allows you to find data within and your social network that you might not have been able to find otherwise. Ben Zhao is an associate professor at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and interviewed for the Technology Review article, says Common Crawl is likely unique, but the problem is that it is increasingly thwarted by social sites who restrict crawling. Now, this goes back to what we were talking about with the social sites restricting each other at the top of the show. Is this a great sign for the perseverance of the open web that we're finally getting what Google created 10 years ago to build its business that's open and available for other people to build businesses on? Or is it sort of the last gasp as we balkanize and data gets put behind these walls, like at Facebook and like at Twitter? Darren, what do you think?
Well, I don't think that this hinders Google or any of the other search companies in any way, because, you know, that, you know, the fact of finding something isn't really where they make their money, and especially as Google diversifies and stuff. I think this is a brilliant use of the internet. It very much harkens back to, you know, the kind of old school thinking that we had when all of this was first created, and there were other open databases. I know that there was one on Yahoo. I forget the name of it. I think there was even still one kicking within Google. But I just love the openness, because only good things can come of this. And you're right, this does shed a lot of light to some of the things that we may not be as consumers sometimes thinking about, the kind of walled gardens that we live in inside of these social networks.
But I ask, can it continue to be useful if more and more data gets put behind the walled gardens?
I guess it depends how respectful these places are, right? If they're saying that they're going to archive everything and they're going out of their way to get this data, that seems a little crazy. But the openness of the web almost seems like that's the first iteration of it. This idea that information is free, anyone can get it, crawl all you want, copy the data, put it everywhere. And then now it's like, no, this is our business. We're putting this behind our wall. We're going to charge you for this. And this is, I guess it's almost a sign of the maturity of the internet at this point, that you have all of these walls. It just means that's the way it is now.
Sarah, what do you think of this balance between openness and restrictions?
I understand that the restrictions exist, as Aya said, because you've got companies who are, you know, there's financial gain to be had from people accessing your data. I don't see how a common crawl of most of the web is going to work, though, because you've got these huge, huge companies that exist behind walled gardens. And if that isn't part of this whole entire database going on, then you're not really looking at the true web. Now, I like some of the examples that you mentioned of companies that have specific purposes that can take advantage of something like a common crawl. Yeah, you know, maybe you're not, if you've got a picture of a bird and you want a similar picture of another bird, you're not going to find that on Facebook, but there's probably a lot of other places and you might be satisfied with your results. So a company like TinEye that you mentioned, that reverse search engine, could do okay. But I still think it's a flawed idea.
Or I don't know if the idea is flawed so much as the conditions of the internet.
Sure, yeah. It's a flawed execution, actually. The idea is just fine.
If we didn't have these walled gardens, it'd be great. I mean, it'd be wide open.
Yeah, but they exist, and they're not going away. They're getting worse.
Well, and hopefully something like Common Crawl will, as Darren pointed out, shine the light, or maybe it was Ayaz, I can't remember now, but it will help kind of expose this problem and get people thinking about, like, hey, wait a minute, do we want to be putting all of our information behind this walled garden? What if Facebook goes away? What if Twitter goes away?
Lopan in chat, I just have to interrupt you, says, these walled gardens are becoming more akin to countries, an analogy. It's actually an interesting way to think of it.
Yeah, especially... Actually,
you want our oil? Well, you're going to have to pay.
Tom, are you familiar with the Whole Earth Catalog?
Yeah.
Because this very much reminds me of something that Stuart Brand said back in the 60s, which was, information wants to be free. The famous quote is, you know, or what he said to Steve Wozniak at the time was that, and this is, you know, is echoed in what we see today and what we were just talking about, that on the one hand, information wants to be expensive because it's so valuable. The right information in the right place just changes your life. On the other hand, information wants to be free because the cost of getting it out is getting lower and lower over time. So you have these two fighting against each other.
Yeah, and we are seeing exactly that battle that Stuart Brand described being played out right here. That's a good, really good point. Let's finish up with a randomizer. What will it spit out? Why, it's another tractor beam story. The BBC has a tractor beam story up. Now, you may have said, oh, I've heard about this before. I've heard scientists have created tractor beams, but they only work on particles, etc. Well, this is the first time that a light beam has been used to draw microscopic objects towards the light source. Scientists have previously used a technique called optical vortex, which could move individual particles using beams of light. But this new approach will work on larger items like molecules, but also works in liquids and a vacuum. So we're still far away from grabbing spaceships, but this is pretty cool, right?
Yeah, I mean, this definitely has medical applications right off the bat. I mean, one of the examples they showed was, they discussed is separating white blood cells. So, I mean, while this might not be something you could use to move your vehicle or something right away, the idea that doctors and scientists could use this on that small a level is just really intriguing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, okay, so it can't grab the Millennium Falcon yet from the Death Star.
Yet.
It'll get there.
This is just going to pave the way to one day being able to inverse the tachyon pulse through the main deflector array, and that's what we need to do as a society.
Absolutely. If we want to defeat the Borg, obviously that's what you need to do. Let's check the calendar. Good to have you back, Sarah.
I had no idea what you guys just said for the last 3 minutes. The calendar... First item, earnings continues next week. Yahoo earnings on Monday, the 28th. London's free tube Wi-Fi, we talked about that. It kind of was centered around the Olympics and then it remained, is actually going to become paid Wi-Fi starting on January 29th. Although if you're a Virgin Media, Everything Everywhere, or Vodafone customer, you get to keep that free access, so congrats. And Windows Phone 7.8 is reportedly arriving January 30th. For AT&T Lumia 900 owners.
See, it is a series of tubes.
It is. We should have listened closer. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We've got an email from Cable Ninja. Great name, I gotta say. TNT crew, I know that RIM is a frequent topic of discussion on the show and in the trade rags, so it just occurred to me how BlackBerry could get me to give up my iPhone 5. Tethering. If RIM could convince the carriers not to upcharge for tethering to a data plan that I'm already paying for, I'd make the jump. I'd tether my iPad and live with the shame of using a BlackBerry. Just saying. They always made quality devices and lead the way in enterprise integration for a generation. If they could just provide a browser that didn't suck. Curious to hear your thoughts on the idea. What would it take for you to give up the breadth of available apps on your iPhone or Android device? Sarah, is there anything that RIM could do to get you to switch from an iPhone?
Zero chance.
And so nothing.
No.
Okay, sounds good.
I have free tethering on my Verizon iPhone, and I know there's free tethering on lots of Android phones. So that, to me, isn't the killer thing, but I think the keyboard is the thing that generally sways people over. They want that physical keyboard, right, Darren?
Yeah, and I think that they'll be around. I mean, if they can just kind of carve out that market and just be like, look, we're the ones that have the keyboard that doesn't suck. Remember us? And I think they'll continue to flourish just for that reason and that reason only. And I think that's funny that what Iyad said earlier about two companies that do great keyboards potentially coming together.
Mm, I like that idea too.
Got another email from Matt, the Linux geek, who says, hi, TNT crew, just thought I'd send this link, he has included a link, in hopes of it being included in the show. It's a petition on the WhiteHouse.gov website to permit unlocking of your own phone.
Yeah, this is asking for a repeal of the DMCA after the Library of Congress allowed the exemption to the DMCA for unlocking your phone to expire. That happened Saturday. So after Saturday, unlocking your phone in many cases will be a violation of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act again. It was always a violation of it, but the Library of Congress had issued an exemption. So if you would like to fight against that, go to petitions.whitehouse.gov and look for Make Unlocking Cell Phones Legal, or we'll have the link in the show notes as well at twit.tv/TNT. That is it for this episode of Tech News Today. Darren Kitchen, what is going on with the Hack 5 and the ThreatWire and all that stuff?
Well, actually, Hack 5 and ThreatWire have been pretty much focused on Aaron Schwartz over the last week. So there's a touching episode over at hack5.org.
Check it out, hak5.org. That is it for us. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, our email address, tnt@twit.tv, or you can give us a call and leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. I almost forgot the subreddit, too, technewstoday.reddit.com, to suggest a story. We'll be back on Monday. All new slate of guests. Peter Wells joins us Monday, actually. See you then.